Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
The way to grow and to learn is not just to create new alternatives, but to have the creating of the rules, the breaking of rules and making up new ones, be a constant human evolutionary activity, so that we never turn anything that we're doing into gods that cannot be challenged. And that, to me, is the core of innovation. And I think in some ways that's part of what you see in the best of innovation. It's constantly iterating off of what has come before and being invested in the discovery of the new. And that can be both in the development of products and science and so on, and it also can be in the area of humanity and how human beings live and work and grow together.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And I hope you enjoyed my recent conversations with Dr. Gleb Sapirsky, disaster avoidance expert, and with Sarah McIntyre of Bright Inbound. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Kathy Salet. Kathy's the co-founder of Performance of a Lifetime and also author of the book Performance Breakthrough, A Radical Approach to Success at Work, in which she presents Performance of a Lifetime's revolutionary approach to learning, to growing, and to adapting to change. The book explores the becoming principle methodology and features real-life case studies as well as tips, techniques, and exercises for readers to create performance breakthroughs in their everyday lives. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. That requires absolute clarity about who your ideal clients are and how you can help them. To help you get that clarity about your ideal client, take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class, where in less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Kathy talked to me about how you are both who you are and who you are becoming. She explained how improvisation can be applied to performance, to business, and to life. And she explained why you should be comfortable with not knowing the answers and how to ask curious questions. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Kathy Salet. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast all the way from New York in the USA, Kathy Salet, who's an author, a performer, an executive coach, and a social entrepreneur. Kathy, welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you so much for having me, Jürgen. I've been looking forward to our conversation.
Sheila Heen, who was our guest on episode 248 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we talk to you and invite you to the podcast. So big hello to Sheila.
Big shout out to Sheila, yes.
Kathy, you're also co-founder and CEO of Performance of a Lifetime, and you're also author of the book Performance Breakthrough, which describes a radical approach to success at work. And in that, you present the business performance of a lifetime's revolutionary approach to learning, to growing, and to change. You've use that to help teams and organizations and thousands of individuals break through whatever's holding them back, achieve breakthroughs in their performance, in the workplace, and in their personal lives. So that sounds really fascinating. I know that the book is really interesting, presenting a lot of the case studies there and what you've learned from working with a lot of people. Now, before we start talking about all things change, learning, growth, and performance breakthroughs, I know you've had a fascinating history. You started your own school at 13 when you decided that you didn't like the conventional education system that you're in. You got together with a group of other students and started your own school and basically went on a journey of alternative learning at that point. What I'm really curious about, people can read about that in some of the links we'll have in the show notes. What I'm really curious about is, where did performance come into that? Performance as in, you know, acting or improv that I know you work a lot on. Where did that come into that, and how did that play a role in those educational experiences and then in what you do today?
It's such a great question, Jürgen. In a funny way, I didn't know that performance and improvisation came into it until years later. Because while as a young person, as a child, and I was a performer, I was a singer, I was constantly in plays and making up skits, as many children are, by the way, but I had a very creative sister who decided to write plays and to direct plays where I was always the star. And so I was constantly performing for neighbors and family members.
It's handy to have that, isn't it?
Very handy to have your own. Yeah. Yes. In fact, I'm still talking with her about writing a new play that stars me many, many decades later. So I was a singer. I grew up in musical theater when some of the big Broadway shows were hitting the stage. And my mother and I used to just run around the house singing, "Someday my prince will come," and just everything. And, you know, I know all the words to literally every musical that was out at the time, still to this day. So that was sort of in my background, but it really, honestly, Jürgen, at the time, didn't seem to play a role and have any relevance in the fact that I hated school and that I wanted to create a new one. I later sort of figured out that, oh, that was an improvisation. That was me and this grouping of people making something up together based on sort of what everybody brought to the table. And we didn't have a rule book. We didn't have a script. We were so bold as to think that somehow we were qualified to create a school and to design it and to run it. And so in some ways, again, looking back, what I see is that we were performing knowing how to run a school. We were performing creating a school. We were pretending that this was something that we could and should do. And it was in that performing, in that pretending, that we actually created a school. But it was all improvisational. It was, you know, at one point, we all sat together and we said, well, what would we like the curriculum to be? And so we just started brainstorming about that. And so then we said, well, how do we, if we want to study, and this is the 60s, so you have to remember, this was like how to tie-dye, the history of the labor movement, you know, all kinds of subject matters that were interesting to us. We came up with them, and then we said, well, how can we learn those? Well, let's improvise, again, even if we didn't have that language, and let's find teachers who want to teach that. Or let's go to the library and figure out whether one of us can teach it. And so all of that was unscripted, and we were creatively bringing into existence something that didn't exist before. And that is such an essential component of improvisation and performing. Performing before you know how, performing who you are becoming.
Hmm. Yeah, which is, I think, one of the core principles of the book itself. You call it the becoming principle. And I love the example you gave, largely because I'm a cyclist. I'm a keen cyclist, but
Yes.
The example is basically that, you know, we get on the bicycle first and we've got training wheels on, and then we might graduate to somebody holding the seat behind us so that we don't fall over. And at some point that person lets go and we don't realize it immediately. And then all of a sudden, oh, we're riding on our own. But the whole principle of that, if you improvise that action, if you do what it takes to become a cyclist, then you become a cyclist, right?
Exactly. If you perform as a cyclist before you are, you perform it, and then, as you point out, you become it. But you don't, you know, you didn't read a book. I mean, maybe you read a book about cycling, but that is not going to suffice for you to learn how to ride a bike. You're just going to have to get up there and pretend that you know what you're doing.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about that whole becoming principle, in particularly how it applies to kind of other situations, perhaps workplace situations, and also how people can develop that mindset. Because often there's, you know, people will read something in a book and say, this is how you do whatever it is they're looking to do. And then they might say, oh, I could never do that. Or, you know, there's a fear or some limiting belief that comes in the way. So how does the whole idea of improv and the becoming principle apply there?
So in the work that we do at Performance of a Lifetime, as well as work that I do outside of Performance of a Lifetime, I have some brand new news to share with you, which actually wasn't the case when you first reached out. I mean, although it was something that was in process, but I have actually just recently stepped down as CEO of Performance of a Lifetime. I am now CEO Emerita, or as I'd like to say, I am CEO Emerita-da! and so while I'm still doing some work with Performance of a Lifetime, one of the things that we've done as a company, and this has been very important in our mission, is we've not only done this performance work, which is really an innovation on traditional psychology and educational approaches. And I'll get back to that in a second. But to not only provide that service to the business community, but also to provide that service and to use that approach to help with social change efforts. So, for example, in building bridges between people who don't talk to each other, one of the programs that we've been very involved in, I've been very involved in, is designing a program called Operation Conversation Cops and Kids, which is a program of a nonprofit called the All Stars Project. And that we bring together police officers and young people from the poor communities. That's a very estranged relationship here in the United States and elsewhere around the world. And so there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anger. And I'll start with that example, given that I'm sort of going down that road to speak to your question. What we found is that, and what we've done in that program, for example, is that we bring the police office together and the young people together, and they're all very trepidatious and, you know, wary of each other. And one of the first things we have them do is to move around the space in slow motion, like as if they're all on the moon walking in a gravity-less environment. It's crazy, right? You know, and it's like, and you can tell one of the things that begins to happen, I say this somewhat facetiously, but it's true, they start to unite in their hatred of the facilitator. who's making them do this very strange thing. They like look at each other and they say, what's going on here? So that's one thing. But perhaps more importantly, it's a form of play. It's both the police officers and the young people are breaking from their roles, from their characters, from their scripts. And they're now starting to sort of move around in slow motion. And they start to smile at each other, and it's hard not to laugh. And now they're doing something together in their relationship that they've never done, never imagined. And that sets the stage for this sort of back and forth between doing weird things like that, you know, passing an imaginary ball, and then having conversation where it's a facilitated dialogue where they can't ask questions. They can just make statements to each other and just begin to listen to each other. What we found is that through playing and performing and improvising for adults, and there's a whole lot to say about how this works when we're children, because that's very important, but I primarily work with adults, is that it helps us to imagine and to experience another part of our humanity. It helps us to laugh together and to realize, oh, this is a different way to interact with another human being, and it seems to be okay. And so they laugh together, they play together, we put them in a ridiculous skit where they play members of the same family. And so cops play kids and kids play the parents, and it's all mixed up and everybody's playing the wrong roles, you know? And they have an argument about what kind of pet to get. Okay. And the thing that's amazing, Jürgen, and this is pretty consistent over the years, over two decades of our doing this work. Yes, there is fear. Yes, there is, you know, worry about, like, oh my God, can I do this? Do I want to do this? But what you find is that if you can create an environment where this is about creativity, this is about innovation, this is about breaking out of our boxes, people start to play, they start to perform, and then they really get into it. And that creates the space and the environment for them to hear each other, to say some things that they haven't been able to say, to listen in some new ways. And literally every single person in that workshop, the kids or the cops, walk away saying, wow, I didn't know, for example, that we all are scared that when we leave our houses in the morning, we may not come home alive that night. Mm. I didn't know that for most of the young people in the room, and for actually most of the police officers, who, by the way, are from some of the same communities, they didn't grow up with a father. But it's play and improvisation and performance that creates the space for them to discover that about each other. So that's an example, but that's outside of a business situation. But I actually think that, so I think it's incredibly powerful, and I have examples after examples of how this works in the business world. I think it actually represents a potential new solution for us as a human race, as the human species, for us to perform both who we are, but also perform who we're not. Perform in a way that's unnatural for us. And that shows us that we've got some new choices.
Yeah. I love that example for a whole lot of reasons, but one of the ones that, and you didn't mention this, but I think it opens up people's eyes to say that, you know, that other person is more than their role. So I've pigeonholed them in the role of either policeman or in the role of, you know, young person, the potential troublemaker, let's say, perhaps, but they're actually a lot more than that. You know, there's and that process allows them to discover things about each other that, you know, we're all a lot more than just the one role that we might be known for in a certain circle of certain community.
So I
love that. And I think you talk in the prologue, you talk about Meryl Streep, who's my favorite actress. And you talk about how, you know, she's done all these wonderful roles, and she's won, I don't know, two or three Academy Awards. She's been nominated countless times. And because she gets into the character, and it's almost indistinguishable, but you point out that it's always Meryl Streep.
Right. It's always Meryl Streep. And you know, what we share with people is that the reason Meryl Streep and other fabulous actors and not fabulous actors can do what they do is because they're human. Hmm. It's actually because they're human beings that they can do that, not because they're great actors, even though they are. It's because that is an innate ability that we humans have. And so we do it so naturally as kids. And up until a certain point when we're children, we're supported to do it, right? And then at some point we get told, and I don't think there's ill intent for the most part, but we basically get told by, you know, our parents or a teacher, stop playing around. Start behaving yourself. Start getting it right. Grow up. You know? And that's cool because, yeah, there are things we have to learn and you got to learn. I talk about this in the book. You know, you have to know that you shouldn't cross the street if the light is red. There's certain rules. You have to know how to balance a checkbook, although actually you don't have to learn how to balance a checkbook anymore, but whatever, whatever the modern day equivalent is. But we do that at the expense, unfortunately, more often than not. And our school systems really perpetuate this. This is another reason why I don't like traditional schools. And we get sort of pigeonholed into those characters that you just identified, into the roles. Well, who are you going to be? Well, you have to be this kind of person. And then in traditional psychology, you know, you get labeled, you know, and when this affects in particular kids from the poorest communities who are labeled very, very easily, well, then that just sets the stage for their future and their lack of future, because now they are, you know, developmentally disabled or their special needs, and they get tracked and they get labeled. And then that begins a process that is, well, you are only who you are. You are not who you are and who you are becoming. And so play for adults, and in particular theater and improvisation, frees us from the rigid roles. You know, in the thing you were saying before, Jürgen, about, you know, said so beautifully about that relative to the police officers and the young people, how that shows up in the work environment is you've got, you know, I don't know, you have like the technology people and you have the business people. So it's often the case that, so an example of companies will come to us with all kinds of requests, right? How they want us to help them. Sometimes it's because they're attempting to sort of affect a new strategy, a new business, you know, strategy, right? And so, for example, we've done a lot of work within technology within very large companies, right? So technology is a huge part of any major company now. And there's a dynamic that exists, which is that for a lot of businesses, the technology people, they're just supposed to do what they're told. They're supposed to do what the business wants them to do. The business needs to be able to accomplish A, B, C, D. So they're sort of order takers, and they sit there and they stand there, whatever, and they sort of take orders from the business. Now, increasingly, you've got a huge amount of wisdom, a huge amount of experience, and a huge amount of information that you need from the tech people that's not making its way into the business people. And so one of the things that we do a lot of work with the tech and the business people on is helping them to see each other in new ways and to help the tech people be sort of sit at the table and be business partners. And so that's a hard thing to shift because the business people are just like, I don't want to talk to you. Just do what I want you to do. I mean, that's an extreme example, but not uncommon. And the tech people are like, you know, well, these business people, they don't know what it takes. You know, they just want everything done by tomorrow and they have no idea, you know, blah, 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 blah. So that's an example of a relationship that we do a lot of work to help people to perform in new ways on both sides of the equation and to be more curious, to learn how to ask questions, to not be such a knower, and to be focused on, if you will, what can we create together? What can we do together instead of what do I have to do to get you to do what I want you to do? That's not just a mindset shift, although it is. In order to get there, you have to help people practice new kinds of conversations. And so we literally take scenes in the lives of people in the business environment and say, let's put that on stage and let's play some different ways that conversation can go. And so we run these conversations like rehearsals. And sometimes we do them with just the tech people or just the business people. And sometimes we're actually able to bring them together. And what people say is that, and what we've seen, because we've seen the impact, and both from a financial, you know, point of view in terms of the businesses being more successful, but also the culture changes. And innovation is much more possible and much more able to occur because you've got people who are on the same side.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that example because I can really relate to that from my time in the corporate world where, you know, we were faced with exactly that kind of situation.
Oh, really?
And,
yeah.
And Yeah. So I was in the technical area, but I was also straddling some of the commercial stuff. And so I always found it really frustrating because in some ways when there was that barrier between the technical and the commercial people, and they were like the commercial people were saying the technical folks, they got no clue what it takes to, you know, and the real demands in the marketplace. And the technical folks are saying, well, they got no idea, you know, what it takes to develop these new products and how long and what it costs. And I was in the middle. And so if I try to have a conversation around, well, you know, you've both got good points here and let's try to get together. So I'd be the outsider on both.
So they both hated you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I didn't manage to get make that transition like you talked about the facilitator earlier. So I think that would have worked really well. And also we had another situation where it was actually one of our biggest, well, our biggest customer was very distrusting of us because they thought we were withholding some of the background information. We were very distrusting of them because they were also producing some materials that we produced in-house for their own use. So we thought, well, they're wanting to basically learn our technology and take that in-house. So we were very distrusting of them. And there was always a big issue there. And I remember one time, now I didn't do a performance thing, but I did totally turn something on its head when they wanted to know certain information. And, you know, our people were writing all these, getting the legal people to write all this stuff about how we weren't going to tell them. But at the same time, you know, we're trying to draft up an agreement that they'd continue to buy from us and work with us to develop new products. So I turned it on its head and just put it out there and said, what if we tell them everything? You know, and then everybody kind of, so that was kind of, to me, that was what you're talking about a little bit about, let's write a new script.
Absolutely. I mean, that sounds very performatory to me because you are changing the script and you're saying, well, let's have the scene go this way.
Yeah.
instead of how it always goes. Mm. You know, I want to write a new play. Let's write a new play and try that out. So how did that go?
Well, it actually transformed things. I mean, we still didn't tell them everything, but what it did was we ended up having a task force of, you know, three key people from both organizations get together and actually sit down and work out how we're going to manage this whole process going forward so that we're not going to have these arguments each time in individual case by case basis. And we worked out basically a process whereby we jointly develop products together and at what point key decisions would be made, such as whether it was going to be exclusive to that customer or whether, you know, or where the commercial ramifications would be in terms of cost of, you know, what they would pay for the product, if it was exclusive or not exclusive, and all those kind of things then came on the table and were discussed between the two companies with this working party. And then that group would go back to each company and put the proposals that they came up with, and it worked really well. Did change the conversation.
Awesome. Congratulations. Yeah.
All right. Now, one of the things you've said a couple of times now is, you know, that you are who you are and who you're becoming as well. And you talk about the performance, focusing on who you are, but also who you're not, which is where you start learning, growing and developing. So tell us a little bit about how you go about that, you know, performing what you are not yet.
Well, I think you always want to get help from other people. I don't think this is a solo act.
Yeah.
And that's an important part of what we help our clients with. And, you know, again, whether they're business clients or whether they're, you know, people doing grassroots work in the community. And so I think part of what you want to do is start talking to colleagues and friends and whoever you feel like you trust to say, here's the situation. here's the thing that's upsetting me. Here's the thing that's troubling me, whatever it is, you know, bothering me. How do you see it? And what do you think we might do to change it? Now, sometimes that can be a conversation that you have with somebody outside of the situation. And sometimes it can be with the person that is perhaps even your adversary. Okay. And so, which to me, actually, when you described Jürgen, it feels like it's in sort of that orbit of a kind a thing where, so one of the things that we've helped people to do is to be able to say to each other, whether, and this is on the personal level and on the business level, this conversation's not going so well. Maybe we could do something different together. Maybe we could change it up. You know, what are you talking about? I think the problem is you. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I know. I know that's how you feel. And of course, you understand I feel the same way. But I'm wondering, I think I want to learn more about why this is important to you. And why is this a hot button issue for you? I think I really don't understand it. Now, even you got to say, maybe you say something like that, Jürgen. And really what you're thinking is, I don't give a good goddamn what they think. I don't know. I know exactly why they're saying what they're saying. I know what they're, and that's where you're performing who you're not, because there is a part of you that feels that way. And and for the moment, it feels like the strongest part. But that's where you have to do something that feels unnatural. You know, that's where you have to, it's like, well, what is the last thing I want to do? You know, I don't agree. And what if you sat there and they said some things and rather than just saying, okay, now it's my turn, maybe you ask them more questions. You know, we do this exercise called performing curiosity. And we bring people together and we have them select a bunch of issues that are sort of controversial. Maybe they're controversial within the organization, or maybe they're just controversial, you know, in the larger political, socio-culture at large, you know. And we say, pick a topic between the two of you and your pairs that you feel like is a hot button issue that you have strong feelings about. It might be you have the same feeling as each other, and maybe you have opposite points of view. It doesn't matter. Let's just decide. And pick an issue. So for us in America, sometimes that's gun control, that's immigration. Obviously, that's a big issue around the world. In our country, it's also like Trump, you know, whatever, you know. So there's so many issues, you know, or Brexit, you know. And without getting into the details of exactly how the game is played, you're put in a position where you have to ask questions of the person who has a position that is almost the opposite, the polar opposite of yours. It like upsets you to hear what they have to say. It frustrates you. It makes you angry. And we give them direction where they just have to keep being a learner. They have to keep being curious. They can say, you know, I disagree with everything you are saying from the beginning to the end. And tell me about how you came to feel the way you do. Tell me about it. Tell me what you've experienced in your life that makes you feel this way. I want to know. And you change. Yeah.
I'm guessing they have to be curiosity questions. So there must be some rules there, because you could ask questions like, how can you believe what you believe in light of all this evidence that proves you
wrong. Exactly. So that's a wonderful example, Jürgen. We call that a stinky question. And so we say, this is a stinky question, and it's based, and we give examples, just like you said. How the hell could you possibly have that position? Don't you realize, blah, 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 you know? Yeah, you have to ask questions that aren't a yes or no answer, number one. That's one thing. You can't ask stinky questions. I mean, it is so hard for people to do, but these rules help them. And in the process, it's like, oh my God, I didn't know I could have this conversation in this way. And one of the things they're allowed to say, it relates to what I was saying before, is they could say, how do you think this is going? how are you doing in this conversation? Do you feel listened to? Do you feel, what would you like me to ask you? You know what I mean? I mean, there's you unearth so much, but it changes the dynamic from I'm right, you're wrong, or that everything is black and white, everything is either or, you know. And I think, you know, at the risk of being sort of unduly philosophical, I think what we're getting at, and I think this is important, is we're actually challenging the Western dualism, which is that it has to be either this or that, that many things can't be true at the same time. But that's a falsity from a philosophical and scientific point of view. And sometimes we talk about that with people because people are philosophical. And that's an interesting thing to consider, that you want to include in, you know, the fight about, you know, how come you never clean up after dinner?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And also, I think, you know, having those kind of conversations opens up a whole lot of possibilities. I could imagine that, you know, it and then using your metaphor in terms of writing a new script, that sort of gives you options for, well, we could play out this little scene, or we could play out this scene, or we could play out this scene instead of the one that we have traditionally been playing out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had a conversation just this weekend with my partner, and he and I were actually, we're having a conversation about moral courage and what moral courage is. Just your typical, you know, Sunday morning conversation. So there we are, we're having this conversation. And he and I sort of, you know, he started sort of arguing with me about what I was saying moral courage was and what he was saying moral courage and so on. And it was getting a little heated. And then I said, okay, time out. Okay, but we're going to do a new scene. You know, he sits there, he starts to roll his eyes, you know, here's Kathy go, you know, here goes Kathy again. And I said, I'd be interested in talking about, if you're open to it, the fact that you and I disagree. Let's talk about that. Let's just talk about, oh wow, you and I really think about this differently. I'd like to spend some time there rather than getting into what the disagreements are and trying to convince each other otherwise. And it ended up being a really interesting and I will add a touching and an intimate conversation, because I sometimes like to liken it to, yeah, you are, you're having a fight, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody says, and I do this too, and I direct people to do this, let's dance. What do you mean, let's dance? We're having a serious conversation. I know. Let's dance. Let's get up and dance. And so then you get up and dance, and like everything changes. The scene changes. It's like walking in slow motion, you know, with the cops and the kids. Like, we human beings can perform in new ways and change that is sometimes seems so huge and so, oh my God, how are we ever going to get there? Turns out it's right nearby. It's right next to us. And I think that's a beautiful and important thing for people to learn and to have available to them more than ever in our world.
Yeah, that's a wonderful personal example, and I'm sure everybody can relate to that argument with their partner over things that in the context of things are not really that important, but you know, they become entrenched positions. So breaking the circuit thereby changing the scene, to use your analogy, is a really powerful thing. And I think, you know, the other thing is that conversations all around the world, you know, conversations with people that we don't agree with are so important, and trying to bolster that understanding, you know, whether it's the example you started with where police and kids from underprivileged communities, you know, there's issues there, or whether it goes out to, you know, countries at war.
Yes.
That's the extreme situation there where certain groups don't agree with one another, and then the entire populations of the countries at war suffer as a result.
Yeah, I mean, what would it be like? My mentor, the late Fred Newman, who was a philosopher and a playwright and a therapist, He used to talk about, you know, what it would be like if the Israelis and Palestinians could sit down at the table, and instead of doing what they're currently doing, what they were doing then, and I mean, they're not even at the table anymore. But if we could be at the table and say, let's talk about the fact that we have no idea what to do about this situation. Let's discuss that. We really don't know what to do. And what a bond that could potentially create, because both sides have no idea what to do. So we could talk, let's talk about that for a while.
Yeah.
Where will that lead us? And so for me and for our work, and this, what I would say is sort of, there is a new field that's really emerging, Jürgen, that's called performative psychology, that among other things, you know, reveals that the way we think, the way we talk, our language, the way our culture, that's all socially created. You know, there's a thing in the world called social constructionism. And it's the understanding that all that we currently do was created by human beings. And so consequently, we can continue to create what does it mean to interact and what language is and the norms and so on, because it wasn't handed to us by some god. No, us human beings, excuse my French, we f***ed it up really bad. You know, we messed it up really bad, if you want to cut that out. We can reconsider it. We can reconsider it. So, there are many other performances that are out there. And so this psychology, this educational approach, is about helping people to see that we are the creators of our language, of the rules, of the norms. And so consequently, perhaps the way to grow and to learn is not just to create new alternatives, but to have the creating of the rules, the breaking of rules and making up new ones, be a constant human evolutionary activity, so that we never turn anything that we're doing into gods that cannot be challenged. And that, to me, is the core of innovation. And I think in some ways that's part of what you see in the best of innovation. It's constantly iterating off of what has come before and being invested in the discovery of the new. And that can be both in the development of products and science and so on, and it also can be in the area of humanity and how human beings live and work and grow together.
Yeah, that's a great point. And having different conversations and having creating new choices around those conversations, which essentially I think is what your whole process is about. I think that contributes to that innovation, because there's more choices and more things to consider, and as a result you are less likely to just accept things as a status quo simply That's what we've always done, so we're going to continue to do it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, this is a fascinating conversation, Kathy. I'm just aware of the time, so I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. Talks a lot about innovation. And it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome as a result today.
All right.
What's the number one thing that you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Learn how to improvise. Literally.
Yeah.
I think people should take improv classes. You know, when we first started out with Performance of a Lifetime, nobody had even heard of the word improvisation, unless you were a jazz musician or if you were an improv comedian. Now there's like an improv school in almost every corner of the world, you know. So learn how to improvise, even if you're not, without the goal of trying to, you know, end up on stage. Take some improv classes.
All right. That's really great advice, and it certainly ties in with your whole process around performances and choosing different scripts that, you know, you can improvise on the spot. So if you have that skill, that certainly will contribute to that. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Improvise. Okay.
You did warn me beforehand that you probably had the same answer.
I did warn you, yes. Mm. Okay, number one, determine in whatever, depending on what you're doing and what you're, you know, for me and for our work, I always look, and we've always looked to look for the situations with our clients where we can try out new exercises, new designs, and be able to, if you will, test them. So you have to have the confidence to do that and the sort of like, I think, you know, both confidence in the design, but also not to be worried about it failing. And so sometimes, honestly, that has meant, Jürgen, saying, you know, I'm working with a group of people. We're working with a group of people. Say, listen, we're going to do a new exercise that we just made up. We're going to try it out on you. And, you know, it could be the best thing since sliced bread. It could be that it's a total failure. Are you up for it? Yeah, I'm up. Everybody loves that. They're like, they want to be involved in an innovation. So that's number one, that you to literally in your ongoing work with your clients, try some new stuff. And then the other thing I would just say is, oh, I'm supposed to only have one answer. Sorry, I'll stop there.
That's all right. Yeah, no, go ahead.
Okay. Well, it's a network of support, and to have people in your sort of orbit that respect you and that know about your work and that you have and are willing to help you. And so this might be an answer to a later question, but I will say that get good. You want to become a leader in your field. You want to become more innovative. Get good at asking for help. And don't be afraid of not knowing. People love to help one another. I love being asked for help. And I do everything I can to try to be responsive as often and whenever I can. And so I think that there are people in your orbit or strangers that you can approach. And I've always heard these wonderful stories of people going and, like, you know, saying, will you be on my advisory board? You know, business people, young people get involved, you know, go to, and like, you know, this is, I don't know if this is literally true, but like, you know, the former head of AT&T says yes, but someone like that, you know what I mean? So don't be afraid to ask for help and then have those people as your board of performance directors that help you.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think as entrepreneurs, we probably all tend not to ask for help enough.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, now what's one of the resources you use most often, favorite resource?
Improvisation. Okay. Yes, and. So now I'm going to say a particular sort of golden rule of improvisation. And that is, this is at the core. Like if you've ever seen shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway, or if you've seen improv artists on stage, they are practicing a rule that is simply stated. They say yes to everything that they hear, everything that their scene partner or scene partners do. They accept it as real, as true, as what's happening. And then the and is what comes next. Is the and is adding a little something to it. Adding something to what is happening that you couldn't have said unless you were accepting what you heard. And so that rule, and people should like look it up. And there's like, if you go online, there's all these examples of how to play yes and. Our natural tendency is to say yes but
yeah,
or to say no but.
Yeah.
Okay. But yes and is an incredible tool for innovation and for improving productivity.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great tip. I mean, the whole idea of just the language, the but is such a, it's like, I think Google calls them stop words when you use them in SEO things. And I like to think of it in that way because it's a stop word that basically says everything I've just told you up until the word but is actually wrong, not important.
Right.
What comes next is what's really important. Whereas if you go yes and, like you say, you've sort of accepted what came before and you're adding to it.
Yes.
And again, what I mentioned earlier, you know, that contributes to creating more possibilities. All right. At the risk of getting the same answer again, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
I actually don't have the same answer to that one. Thank God.
I was wondering how you'd work improvisation into that one.
Well, this is sort of like, this may be a cheating answer, but what's the best way to keep a project or client on track? Hire someone to take care of that for you. If you can.
Yeah.
But if you can do that, great. The other thing is you want to assume that more communication is better than none or than less. And so what I have found over the years is you're working on whatever you're working on, but you also, either you or somebody on the team, has to be thinking of what are the things we're doing two steps down the road. And so you just got to have somebody or you is multitasking in that way, you know. And so whether for people that means always working backwards, always reassessing, making sure that everybody is on the same page and knows where we are in the process, you know, and whether that's through conversation. And you have to make the determination, is an email going to be sufficient, or do I really have to get on the phone, or do I really need to see you in person? Because this is the kind of conversation that requires that. And for me, as sort of like weird as it sounds, that's a performance. Because it's sort of like, here's the play that we're in. Here's the beginning, middle, and end. We have these scenes sort of like in our minds about what the process is and what the steps are. And maybe we even have them in a, you know, project plan, whatever. But we constantly have to reassess, is this next scene the one that we're going into, or do we have to write a new one in order to remain and be consistent with where it is that we're headed?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. And certainly the, you know, working backwards from the result that you're aiming for, and then making sure that you're always looking ahead two steps and communicating to everyone that this is where we're up to, this is where we're going, essentially giving them the script for the scenes coming up.
Yeah, I think that it's sort of, this may feel like it's a little bit out of this particular issue, but let me try it out and see what you think, Jürgen. So I'm a community organizer. I grew up as an activist. And so in some ways, the other sort of hat that I always have is, and the theater work is very intertwined with it, because it's like, well, what does the play need? But it's also like, what do I need to do? How do I need to communicate? How do we need to communicate with the people that we're working with so that they feel empowered, so that they know what they have to know, so that they feel included, you know, and they are included. And so I think of that as an organizing strategy, you know, like, how do you get everybody involved and make people feel a part of it? Not because you simply make them feel a part of it, but they are a part of it.
Yeah, that's great advice. So there's transparency involved there, but also getting people engaged and involved.
Yeah.
All right. Now, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be a great listener and question asker.
Hmm.
Create the performance of yourself. Become a performer where people feel really heard when you talk to them, so that they feel like, I want to be with this person. I want to be around this person. I want to see what this person's doing, because they tune into me. I feel listened to. I feel heard. I feel seen.
Yeah, that's great. I think that certainly does differentiate those people that are really good at doing that or are really disciplined about doing that, that does differentiate them. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier about keeping client on track, keeping people engaged, all the stakeholders engaged, and feeling as though it's part of it. I think being a great listener is really important for that. All right, Kathy, thanks for getting us through the buzz round. Now, you did mention earlier that you've stepped down as the CEO of Performance of a Lifetime. So what's next on the horizon for you?
Let me also just say before I go there that I have a wonderful successor. Her name is Maureen Kelly, and she her title is President and Chief Possibility Officer.
Mm.
So we're very excited about that. Yeah. And I'm very fortunate to have been a CEO. I was CEO for 23 years, and to have someone who is so amazing. A lot of people don't have that. And so I'm very excited that Performance of a Lifetime is in fabulous hands and can continue to do great work with our clients from American Express to Nike to IBM to PwC to ArcelorMittal. I mean, on and on, you know. Mm. There is, as I mentioned earlier, that there's a new burgeoning field of performative psychology and dare I say a movement of people who are taking theater and improvisation and off the stage and also using the arts, sort of breaking down the walls of, you know, disciplines, which says that, you know, if you're going to do political science, that's the track you're on. If you do art, that's the track you're on. If you're on visual, you know, everything is, you know, sort of categorized and individuated and separated. But there are more and more people who are combining the arts with social activism, with creating change, whether that's around environmental issues, anti-poverty, in the medical field, working in science, working in academia, working around community development, on and on. People are exploring and playing with how do we use performance as a tool for learning, growth, change, and empowerment, and to help people, as we were talking about before, to be not just who they are, but who they're not yet. Okay. Mm. I decided I wanted to take all that we've created at Performance of a Lifetime over the years and get on some other stages. And begin to teach and educate and help give people tools outside of the business environment. I will say that Performance of a Lifetime in our 23 years of being in existence, one of the things that we did and will continue to do is we've given away over $10 million, cold hard cash, not just in pro bono, like, you know, technical support, or consultation, free training or whatever, but actual cash that we've given to support grassroots organizations who are using the arts and social change in creative and innovative ways. And so that tradition will continue. In some sense, Jürgen, I'm stepping on another stage, but it's very consistent with what I and the people I've worked with for years have believed in and have been dedicated to. I'll probably write another book. I'm thinking of the book, this is, you know, don't hold me to this, but I'm thinking of writing a book called Creating with Crap, because there's so much crap in our world. There's so much crap in our personal lives and the way people relate to each other in our political environments, our political situation, our social, you know, blah, 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 blah. A lot of crap. So how do you create with that? So I want to write a book about that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are, and also I'll just say one more thing. May I?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, because I don't know exactly when the podcast is going to be aired, Jürgen, but there's an international conference that I've been very involved in for a number of years. It meets biannually. It's called Performing the World. And this is a gathering of usually about 400 to 500 people, and it's grown every year, who are performance activists who are doing the very thing I just described. And they're from Kenya and from the UK, and they're from Melbourne, and they're from New Zealand, and they're from Johannesburg, and they're from Nepal, and they're from Israel. They're from all over the world. And it's a gathering where people can come together and learn new best practices to to create a network and build community and share people's share their work with each other. It happens in New York City, and check it out, performingtheworld.org, and the conference is happening in New York City at the end of September this year, 2020.
All right. Well, we'll have links to that in the show notes. And are there any other places where people can reach out to you and learn more about you and your book, of course, and even say thank you for what you shared with us today, Kathy?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn, Kathy Salit, S-A-L-I-T, first name Kathy with a C. I'm on Facebook. Both I have a personal Facebook page, but I also have Kathy Salit Author. And on Twitter, at Kathy Salit. And then you can also check out the performanceofalifetime.com website to learn more about the company.
Hmm.
And
All right. Well, thanks. We'll add those to along to the performance event you mentioned and have all the links in the show notes so people can click through. Now, what number one piece of advice would you like to leave our listener with today, particularly in the area of being a leader and being a leader in their field, being a leader in innovation?
Be open to not knowing. Don't rush to have an answer or have the answers. Become comfortable and start to relish being uncomfortable, not knowing. Because if we only reach for the answers and don't live in the question and in the unknown, we can't discover and innovate.
Hmm. Yeah, I love that. Be comfortable being uncomfortable, but be comfortable not knowing and living in the question. And I think that then leads to more curiosity as well if you do that.
Exactly.
Hmm. And asking more questions. All right. Well, finally, Kathy, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Yeah, this is how you get your people.
That's right.
I had a couple of thoughts. One is this guy named Phil Terry, and he runs an organization called Collaborative Gain. And they're basically sort of peer councils with people in business where they get together and they basically provide support and help for one another. And he sets it up so that it's like non-competitive, so that you don't have like, you know, somebody who's like the CMO from Walmart and Kmart, you know, or Target in the same circle where people, so people are free to, you know, talk without worrying about stealing secrets or whatever. Yeah. And he's done this for a number of years and it's really successful and it's just made such a difference for so many business people. So Phil Terry, I would recommend. And then there's this other, are you interested in innovations in politics at all?
Oh yeah, why not? We haven't had anybody in that game. Hmm.
Yeah, well, then I would recommend a woman who happens to be my sister.
Hmm.
Her name is Jacqueline Salit. And she is the president of an organization here in the United States called independentvoting.org. And, you know, what you may not know, Jürgen, is that 47% of American voters are now self-identified and registered as either independents or non-affiliated, meaning they're neither a member of the Democrat or Republican Party. And for American politics, for years, and it remains the case, this is an innovation that is whose time is yet to come.
Mm.
The only game in town are the Democrats or Republicans. But the fact of the matter is that more and more people are like, they're saying, you know what? I don't want to be labeled that way.
Hmm.
I don't want you to put me into a category that means that then I have to vote this way or that way, or that I believe this or that. But instead people are like, you know what? I got my own mind. I vote for the issue if I like it. I vote for the candidate. But it's also a statement of non-compliance, because part of what they're saying is, well, just what I said, Don't put me into your box.
Yeah.
So anyway, so 47% of American voters are now independents, and that's a serious and significant new voice. And my sister is an independent political strategist, you know, and there's all kinds of stuff that's going on in America that is sort of like a lot of people don't know about because it's not getting the press because everybody, you know, is into the Democrats and Republicans. And so she'd be a fabulous guest if you want to sort of talk about the culture of politics and how that's changing.
Mm, sounds fascinating. All right. Well, we'll get an introduction from you to both Phil and Jacqueline and see if we can have those conversations. So
I have one more person if you want them.
Oh, sure. The more the merrier.
So this is this guy named Tom Andrews, who runs a leadership consultancy. He had been the president of a company called SY Partners. He's now on his own, but like they've done and he's done leadership strategy consulting with some of the top CEOs in the world, you know, Howard Schultz from Starbucks, worked very closely with Steve Jobs' wife on her education work. There's a bunch of other people IBM. I'm so, you know, and he's a very cool guy doing very interesting work. So I would recommend him too.
All right. Well, we'll add Tom to that list as well. So thanks, Kathy. And thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. This has been fun. We've improvised a little bit going through the conversation today, and I've really enjoyed it. And I wish you all the best for the future and your new endeavors. And let's keep in touch.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Jürgen. It's really lovely to talk with you.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed that engaging and insightful conversation with Kathy and took something away from her episode. Many of the examples and techniques Kathy shared with us can be applied in business to improve our performance and to change the script, as she puts it, so that we can change the outcome. I'd love to know what you took away from Kathy's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Kathy Salit. That is CathySalit, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Kathy Salit. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Kathy there, as well as links to the Performance of a Lifetime website, to her book, Performance Breakthrough, to the Performing the World conference that she shared with us, and of course to her social media pages and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. Kathy suggested three guests for our podcast. She suggested we have a conversation with Phil Terry of Collaborative Gain, with Jacqueline Salit, political innovator and advocate for the rights of independent voters, and with Tom Andrews of TJA, a change leadership company, on future InnovaBuzz podcasts. So Phil, Jacqueline, and Tom, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Kathy Salit. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will enable you in less than 30 minutes to gain absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with producing your very own podcast, even launching your very own podcast if you don't yet have one, then send me an email to jürgen@innovabiz.co and we can set up a quick call to have a short conversation and find out whether we're a good fit for one another. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Murray Streets from BC&F Dentsu Agency and Justin Blackman of Pretty Fly Copy. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.